McShane Bible Study Days 297, 298. And we started in 2 Kings, chapters 5 and 6. And so 5 is the chapter with Naaman being healed of leprosy. He has a little girl that works for his wife that they had taken on a raid of Israel previously. And she knows there's a man of God in Israel and says, oh, if you were there, he could, you know, heal you from your leprosy. So the king writes to the king. It's kind of weird how it never mentions the name of the king of Israel at this point. Is this still Ahab? Is this, or we, do you remember, Weston? Okay, in chapter 3, Jehoram was king, reigned for 12 years, and he's the one that went out with the king of Edom and Judah and got in the battle and with Moab. And that's the last time a king is mentioned. So I don't know if he's still king or someone after him. They've obviously, the author here has just decided to focus on all the acts of Elisha. But Jehoram had already seen, you know, a powerful thing by Elisha. And so perhaps this is all just during his time. He'd come to fully respect that Elisha was a man of God. And he'd saved them in a time of crisis during a battle or before a battle. And so maybe it's all him. It doesn't say. So let's see. Back to Naaman. So they go to the king. The king, you know, he has no idea how to, he thinks that the king of Syria is trying to start a battle or something, right? Because why are you asking me to clean your servant of leprosy? How is that possible? But Elisha hears, he has him come, he tells him to get in the river 7 times. He finally does it, he's healed, he wants to give him presents, he says no. He says, well, then I will always worship the Lord. And but then he has the presence of mind to say, just please forgive me. I work for the king of a foreign king who worships a foreign God. And so I will have to go in with him. He likes to rest on my arm. I don't know if he's an old king that needs help standing, or it's kind of odd. But maybe he needs help just standing there. And so, you know, in that way, I will still be kind of participating in the worship of a foreign god. And, you know, Elisha says, go in peace. So it's similar to some of the discussions we've had in the New Testament of these things. If you understand they have no power and you're not worshiping them, then they have no power over you, right? But for someone who gives them power, then they have power, right? So Naaman goes, and then Gehazi, who's the assistant of Elisha, is overcome with greed. And so he runs, and he says, no, my master changed his mind. I want some of that silver. I want some of those clothes. It's funny, the massive amount of gold and silver, like huge riches, right? And then 10 changes of clothing, right? I mean, the... So what we can infer, it doesn't say, but we can infer it's very nice clothing. So probably the king had access to probably his own, you know, employee, someone or some people who could make fine clothing, which at that time would have been very rare. Most people would have had very basic clothes. I can't imagine even that, because this, there's no getting around, this was a massive amount of gold and silver. Mm-hmm. But, so I can't even imagine that the clothing could have a similar value. However, that doesn't keep it from still being rare and outside the grasp of most people, mm-hmm. Right? And so... Anyways, I just always find that funny. And 10. So Gehazi wants 2 of those clothes, right? He didn't ask for much silver, but he wants 2 of those clothes. Right? And he comes back to Elisha, and Elisha knows what he did, right? And he says, all right, the leprosy that's gone from Naaman is going to be on you and your family forever. And
then why would someone want to have kids with him if he's a leper?
Good question. I don't know if he already had a family or if that was to come. And I don't know. In the next chapter, we see that Elisha now has another assistant. But it doesn't name him as Gehazi. I don't know. Is this a new one or is it still Gehazi and he's just walking around leprous? My guess is he's got a new one now, but it didn't say. And so the axe head, you know, again, this part of 2 Kings, they just keep listing all these miracles that Elisha does, right? So he helps save the axe head that had fallen in the water that a prophet had borrowed. And then the king of Syria sends a massive army against him, right? And so his assistant, what does he call him? He doesn't use the word assistant. What does he call him? Servant. Okay, so his servant. And he says, what are we going to do? You know, this army's against us. We're going to die. And he says, do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Kind of a famous verse for one thing, but also something that we should always remember, right? Mm-hmm. In that kind of what Jesus, you know, when he's talking to Pilate, it's like basically, if this wasn't God's will, my followers would overwhelm you. Mm-hmm. Well, he's standing next to the man representing Rome, right? The greatest army on the earth. But Jesus has full understanding and confidence that those who are with me are far more than those who are with you, right? Well, Elisha understood that right here, right? And so he prays for his servant that his eyes be opened. And he sees all the horses and chariots of fire surrounding them, right? But then he doesn't, unlike Elijah, he doesn't call down the fire to destroy them. He prays that they'd be made blind. He delivers them to the king of Israel. And then they send them back. And it says, and the Syrians did not come back. And then the very next verse says, and then the Syrians came back. So I assume that means some time passed, but then they did come back. They did put Samaria to siege, right? And so what happens is they cut off the incoming of food, and all of a sudden, after a while of that, there's no food left, right?
That's why you make food stores.
That's why you store food, yeah. And these women, this is just terrible and hard to imagine how someone could come to this place. But these two women had made a deal that they would eat one of their sons one day and the other one's son the next day. And then the first woman who did it was surprised that the other woman lied about eating her son. And so she's calling out to the king. The king is distraught. And so then he wants to like put the blame on Elisha for all this, right? And then the story will pick up tomorrow. And then we move to 1 Timothy chapters 2 and 3. And, you know, he's talking about interrelationships. So these letters to Timothy are helping him to establish the culture of the area. It says, first and foremost, they should be spending their time in prayer, intercession, thanksgiving, made for all people, for kings and people in high positions. He says, we're trying to get along with everybody here, mm-hmm. Right? And our goal should be that we may lead a peaceful, quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good and is pleasing in the sight of God, our Savior, who desires all people to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. Right? He's saying, you know, that there's a truth of the life in Christ in us. We want to be positioned well to be that light that other people can know the Lord through us, right? And then so he goes on and talks about how people should treat each other, how people should should dress, how people should be, who should be teaching. And then he goes on in chapter 3 about how to set up leadership in areas and what kind of people they should be, what kind of family they should have, that they should be mature, not recently coming into the Lord, but, taught up and trained up by the Spirit over time, right? And then, again, so he's talking about elders, he's talking about deacons, they're pretty similar characteristics. And then he starts talking about the mystery of godliness in this last part. He says, 16, great indeed, we confess, is the mystery of godliness. He was manifested in the flesh. So he's saying there's a mystery here of what it is like to be transformed by God. And then he's quoting, I don't know if this is a psalm or what, but it looks like he's quoting here. This app doesn't tell me what he's quoting. But so we see a picture of Jesus here, but he's pointing to this. He's talking about overseers and elders, right? So he's talking about this is what God does in a man, in a person that he uses, right? This is the process. He was manifested in the flesh, vindicated by the Spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. So the process, the mystery of godliness is that we take in this Jesus into our life, that his life transforms our own, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Next, we're looking at Daniel chapters 9 and 10. And so chapter 9, it's the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, or Xerxes. He's a Mede. And he's now king. They had the kind of the quick, silent victory over Babylon. And Daniel, it's pretty cool to read this because, so Daniel has the scriptures, right? So he, of course, they're all very familiar of Jeremiah. He would have been super famous because this has been going on and on for decades that they're going to get conquered by Babylon, right? And then they do get conquered by Babylon. And so everyone believes Jeremiah is this great prophet, right? They didn't want to believe him at the time, but then when everything he said came true, then they're like, all right, man, this guy's really hearing from God, right? I'm not saying that was all in Daniel's heart when he was a young boy and these things were happening. I'm just saying in general, that's how I'm sure the people would have taken this, right? But Jeremiah also said, this will be for a time of 70 years. And so now Daniel's much older and he's reading this. He says, whoa, this 70 years are coming to an end here. And Jeremiah said it would be 70 years. But he's also reading the Law of Moses. And in the Law of Moses, God said, if you will be my people, I will be your God. If you will walk in my ways, I will bless you. But when you turn away from my ways, you will be turning into cursed and there will be consequences for that, right? Mm-hmm. But when you are, part of the Law of Moses also says, but after these things happen, but you turn your back, you turn your heart back towards me, then I will bring you back. And he told all Moses this, like, what was it, like 1,000 years before Daniel? Mm-hmm. And so, Daniel's reading all this. He's like, whoa. And then, but what? God told us all these things. All we had to do is walk in his ways and he would have blessed us. And we didn't do it. So he, on behalf of his entire nation, his entire people, starts repenting to God and saying, I'm sorry, Lord, we did not do what we promised you we would do. Mm-hmm. Right? And so he's repenting to God for his people. And that's what most of this chapter is. He said, you're righteous, God. You did exactly what you told us and exactly what we agreed to 1,000 years ago as a people. You did it all exactly how you said, and we deserved it. But Lord, we're turning back to you now. right? And so the angel Gabriel comes and is sent to him and speaks to him, right? Same angel that's so active in the early part of, to Mary and Joseph, right? And he explains the 70 weeks. So verse 24, 70 weeks are decreed about your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to put an end to sin and to atone for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal both vision and prophet and to anoint a most holy place. I have heard it taught that in the Sanhedrin, apparently the records are still there. I don't know if it's in like the Talmud or the Mishnah, right? Yeah, I don't know. But the Jews today, and it's common. It's common in Christian circles too to read Christian books about God rather than the Bible. Like a lot of people read a lot of Christian books without opening the Bible much. There's nothing wrong with a good Christian book, although certainly there's bad teachers with bad books. But we can tend to, the enemy will like to get us off track reading other things. And so that's common if you're a very observant Jew today. You end up following stuff that, and they know it's not the Bible. They would say the Tanakh is, or Torah, depending on, some say only the Torah is the Bible, some say the entire Tanakh is the Bible, which is what we call the Old Testament. So they know that's the Bible, but they spend their time reading other people's interpretations of the Bible, which if those interpreters are not led by God, then you're getting off course, right? But anyways, it does, those sorts of things do carry a lot of history, and one of the histories is early when Jesus was still a very small boy, someone at the Sanhedrin was quoting this verse and saying, oh no, we are ruined, because it was 490 years later. Mm-hmm. And so when they looked at the seventy times seven is 490. And so they looked at that as years and said, which the Messiah is supposed to be here by now. Well, the Messiah was born. He just hadn't come onto the scene yet. So Daniel's prophecy and what Gabriel told him was ended up being true and accurate. They just didn't know it yet. You see that? And so, and I don't understand all of what he's saying with the 62 weeks. I spent a little time kind of looking at that, but he says, and then the end shall come with a flood, and to the end there shall be a war. Jesus talks about the end times will be like the days of Noah, right? Mm-hmm. People will be eating and drinking, just going about a worldly life, but judgment will come on that worldly life, right? Mm-hmm. Only those who have gotten into the ark with the Lord are saved from such a thing, right? That He blesses his remnant people. Well, Daniel was saying the same thing a long time before, 500 years before Jesus said it, right? 27, and he shall make a strong covenant with many for 1 week, and for half of the week he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering. So half of a week, 3.5, right? We see this 3.5 years a lot. We see it in Revelation 12, for instance. And so it's interesting how these things add up. And for half of the week, he shall put an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wing of abomination shall come one who makes desolate until the decreed end is poured out on the desolator. So this is a little different translation than I've typically read before. He uses kind of different words, but he says there's one that brings an abomination, desolation to the house of God, right? Jesus similarly warned against certain things. He said, when these things are happening, get out of there, right? But he says these are all just things that must happen, right? Because God needs a purified people. Right? It was exactly what God was doing in Daniel's life, was bringing out a remnant who did not go after the old ways. And although we can look at the people of Jesus during the time of Jesus, and Jesus said, here's all your problems, they had left the old ways. They were purified in one sense from the old ways. They still didn't have the Spirit of God. The timing wasn't right for them to be the fullness of God. But we can see a clear picture that they were purified from many of the ways God's people had gone astray before. Make sense? Chapter 10 is continued on to 11, right? So we get to the end of the chapter and we're like, well, that story didn't end. That's because we'll get there tomorrow. But he's now going, well, let's see. I thought he went back in time here. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar, and the word was true, and it was great conflict. Oh, I was confused when I read that earlier. And so he spent time fasting and praying, right? He only ate vegetables, and he spent time fasting and praying. And then he had this incredible experience seeing, I don't know, what many people think was Jesus, but he's this like blazing figure, right? And again, looks kind of similar to how other people saw Jesus in the throne room. And he also says, and so this angel comes to him. But he says he's been praying for 21 days. He says, as soon as you start praying, I came to you. This is one of the best chapters we have for understanding battles in the heavenlies. Okay? So he says, 12. Then he said, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. Right? 21 days ago. 13, the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. So we see here that the Persian kingdom had a ruler, authority, it's called a prince. And it seems to be backwards from the way mankind does it. The prince is higher than a king in the spiritual realm. And so the kingdom of Persia has a prince, which is a angelic force that in Satan's kingdom, right, who is in charge of that. So we come to understand each nation has, Satan has a throne over it, right? There's, Mommy and I have experienced this, even when we went, even though it's inside what we think of as the United States, you know, the trip that we met on was in an Indian reservation, Choctaw Reservation. There's very different spiritual realities there. It's both legally and spiritually, it's a different nation. There's different spiritual realities, different powers, you know? And so he's in Israel, it's different too, but it's very different. Very different, but that's a whole long conversation. So he says he had to fight through for 21 days. He wasn't able to get through, right? But then Michael, who's a chief prince, right? So we see Michael and Gabriel mentioned as chiefs, right? In the parts of the Bible that are what we call the Bible. And so he gets through, right? With Michael's help. Okay, so now we're just going to back out of this for a moment, talk about Revelation 12 again. What do we see in Revelation 12? These authorities thrown down from the second heaven into the first heaven, which is the earthly realm, causing much more havoc than they did, but having less power and authority than they had when they were in a higher heavenly reality, right? And then we see the Sun Company raised up and placed in thrones, powers, and authorities. You see that? That's an end times thing that was prophesied that has never existed in all the other times that we read about. But we see, we get a good glimpse of kind of what that looks like here in Daniel. See that? So you have to to get understanding of all these things, you have to put it all together, right? To get understanding of how this is all built, because we can't see these things with our eyes, right? But we come to understanding by continually seeking the Lord, have us explain and expand and put together the different things He has given us through His Word, right? Okay, so He came, and so He's, I'm gonna explain this vision to you, right? And he's tired, he gives him energy, and then we're going to get to that basically in the next chapter, right? Mm-hmm. And we're wrapping up in Psalms 51 to 54. I was only going to mention just Psalm 53. Verse 2 says, God looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there's any who understand, who seek after God. This follows and is also before kind of a refrain who says, there's no one good, not even one. Right? Mm-hmm. Which Jesus repeated when he was called good, right? Mm-hmm. I know we've covered this before, but Jesus also said, be perfect as I am perfect, mm-hmm. right? So what is the perfect? Do you remember last time we discussed this?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, well, it's the act of living your life submitted to God, seeking God, following God, which is what this verse says, right? God looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God, mm-hmm. right? And so Jesus says, I'm perfect because I've completely laid my life down. I only do what I see the Father doing. I obey mm-hmm. him in every way. And mm-hmm. that's what makes me perfect. Mm-hmm. You be perfect too. And they called him good. He said, there's no one good, which is what David's saying here, right? Mm-hmm. I assume, was this one David? Yes. In other words, it's not about how righteous, oh, I did this or I didn't do that. It's not about those things. That's what religion, the spirit of religion wants it to make us about, right? That's what religious people want it to be about. How many things on this list of do's did you do? How many things did you do that you weren't supposed to do that were on this list of don'ts? Mm-hmm. Right? That's what religion is, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the heart of God. That's not the way of God. Do we do more good things when we're obedient to the Lord naturally as an outflow, as fruit of the tree? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do we do less of those things we shouldn't do because they're ways the enemy would get us astray? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's not that those things are not without merit, but it's not the life. Mm-hmm. God is saying, follow me, seek me, mm-hmm. and live this life with me. I will teach you. I will grow you. Mm-hmm. Right? All right. I don't have anything else, do you?
No. God bless you.
God bless you.